We will record it, and I guess whoever is interested will listen later. The topic I wanted to speak to about tonight is the question of when is it proper to be machmir. The word machmir means to be stringent, meaning that there are people out there that are, what we call ultra-Orthodox, and even though that the rule is you have to do this much, they want to do that much more. So is that a good thing, or is that not a good thing? Is it a good thing that, so let's say, the majority opinions say one way, but there's a minority opinion that says the other way, that says, no, you have to be much more than this. Do we want to go for the one that's the more stringent, or no, we can just follow whatever the majority is? So in order to get an understanding of this, we start with the Gemara in Gittin, which you guys probably did in the Daf Yomi around 2 months ago. And it says as follows. Now, the rule is, a little bit of the background is, often, so when a couple gets divorced, the man gives the divorce document, the get, to the woman. However, let's say the man is in Denver and the woman's in New York, and his arms are just not that long. So what are we going to do? So he can go and he can make an agent to deliver it on his behalf. Right? So that will happen sometimes. And it's interesting, I believe in my experience, over half of the divorce is now done through agents. And sometimes they're both in the same building, but they just don't want to be in the same room. So, right?
It's a very difficult ceremony.
Right. Again, it doesn't become easier, if. But that's in my experience, and that's fine. We do it all the time. Now, when the agent delivers the divorce document, he has to announce "Bifonai Nechtav" and "Bifonai Nechtam." Meaning that it was written before me and it was signed before me. Meaning that I am hereby testifying that I've seen the husband instruct the scribe to write it. I've seen the scribe write it. And in fact, I saw the witnesses sign it. I am confirming that this is a kosher get that's being given over. Now, when the person says, I have seen it, what does that mean? Do they have to see a little bit or do they have to see every little bit? So Marsh is of the opinion, every little bit. And that, in fact, is an opinion in the Talmud. Not the opinion we follow, but because it's anti-Semitism, that's what
Yeah.
they Right, so it says, Bar Hedja Boy La Asuye Gita. So this fellow was going to deliver a get. Asul Kameder of Achei Dehavi Mamunei Gitti. So he went to this Rav Achei, who was in charge of Gittin. And he said to him, Amalek, Sorech Ata Lamor Al Kol Os Va'os. He told him, you have to sit there as the agent, and you have to watch every single letter being written. Also, the Kamei, the Rav Ami, the Rav Asi, Amalu, Lo Tzriches. But then he went to Rav Ami and Rav Asi and said, no, you don't have to. Just see a little bit, that's enough. So he said, well, maybe I should be stringent. Even though I don't have to watch every letter, maybe I should, to make everybody happy, I should watch every letter. So they say, so if you're going to say, I want to be stringent, no, you cannot be stringent. Nimsa to Motzi Razal Gita Marishonim. What's going to happen? So over the years, right, there's been many divorces that have been delivered by an agent. And the agent, just sees that the scribe starts writing. He pops his head maybe now and then. He doesn't watch everything, right? If you're going to sit there and watch every single letter specifically, people say, aha, so we have to watch every letter. That means all the other people who didn't watch every letter, that divorce document was no good. And therefore, the couple was still married. And therefore, when the woman got remarried, that was bigamy, and her children are mamzerim. So therefore, we don't want to go down that road, do we now? No. So therefore, not only don't you have to, but you're not allowed to be stringent. Because when you are stringent, you are saying that the other ones are no good. Now, the question is, okay, now how broad do we take this? Right? So, meaning, is there anytime I'm being stringent, one could be led to thinking that the people who are not stringent, right, they are having a problem. Right? Let's say High Point Creamery. High Point Creamery is very, very kosher. It has the scroll K on it, and therefore we know that it's only the highest level of kashrus. And of course, even if you could buy an ice cream there on Shabbos, it doesn't matter. It's still very kosher. And because of that, people will, right? There's no problem. I hereby tell you, you can eat there. But there are people out there that say, I only eat chol of Yisrael, right? I will only drink milk if it's been blessed. The cow blesses it first. So that, right? So the question is, okay, this is a stringency that I have accepted. But wait a second, are you saying that all the other fine Jews that eat in High Point are doing something wrong?
No.
So what's the difference between that and this?
It's a more stringent level.
So, but this is also writing, watching every level is a letter is also a more stringent level, I would say.
Right.
So the fact that the Talmud here says that you can't be stringent in watching the divorce document, right? How far does this go? Does this mean every stringency should be not allowed? Because for fear that you were in fact...
Well, you can choose to
then,
be more stringent.
So why can't I choose to be more stringent here?
I could choose, but I don't choose to.
But you're not allowed to choose.
What do you mean?
Because God, she said so.
I'm telling you. if I choose to be a Chol of Yisrael, I'm not going to be eaten at Creamery.
Well, that's great. But aren't you?
It only affects you.
No, but meaning the question here, right? Like the Talmud just said, I can't be stringent and say you have to watch every letter, right?
Right.
So why are you saying I'm allowed to be stringent and say I'm not eating in the Creamery? Where's the difference? So that's the question, right? It would seem to be the same, right? Until you can explain to me otherwise. So the Trumas HaDeshen, in fact, asked this question. So he says, the Trumas HaDeshen lived in the 15th century in Germany. And he's quoted oftentimes in terms of halachic authority. And he says, Had the Kamer Talmud of Perakam de Gittin. Right? The quotes our Gemara, it says, right? He said, but there are things out there that we are stringent in, even though there are opinions that say it's okay, we in fact don't do it. Right? What's an example for that? So again, if a woman receives her get, so what happens? We take the get and we fold it up, right? We fold it into ninths, then we have the woman put out her hands like this, she closes her hands, she reaches the hands over her head, right? And after doing that, she goes and she puts it under her arm, right? And then she goes for a walk with it. Right? Why do we make her do the hokey pokey? Right? What's the reason for that?
It's a symbolic showing that.
So let me ask, if the woman didn't do that,
yeah.
Right? If she just took it and put it
in her pocket.
And then, no, right, would she be divorced?
Yeah, I think so.
Right. So again, what we're doing is, but we fold it up so it can totally fit within her hands, right? And then afterwards, we have her do all these various motions to indicate. But really, you don't need to do that, right?
In fact,
there was a movie called Get. Anyone ever see the movie Get? Right?
No, but I heard about it. It's been very good.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin it for you. Right? Okay, so I will. So the way the movie Get works is the man, right? So when you give over the divorce decree, he's supposed to say, you know, Hare ze gitech, this is your divorce, but Hare at muteres l'chol adam, and now you can marry any man you want. And the man refused to say the words. The husband.
In the movie. Oh, in the movie.
Fred.
Because Fred.
So the story is, right, and therefore the movie ends that she, because he won't say the word, she's not divorced. According to Halacha, the whole thing's not true. Right? He doesn't have to say a word. Right? Then the proof being that, you know, we have him say the words, but if he refuses to say it. The question is, right now, people get ideas, right? People will spend all this money producing a movie based on a false premise that if he doesn't say the words, it's no good.
I can't remember. Does he drop it in her hands?
What?
In the movie, I don't remember.
Right, he gives it to her, etc.
But
he will not say the words, right? Until, mm-hmm. So until there is a later agreement. So the question here is, they're asking him is, okay, so you're not allowed to tell a person, but we do make them do this whole hokey pokey, right? We add these words that you say, right? There's so much. Why is one okay and why is one not okay? Right? Where do you draw the line? What are are stringencies that we encourage you to accept, and which are stringencies that we say that it's problematic if you do.
Are you joking when you say she puts it under her arm?
Am I joking?
Not at all.
What's the purpose of putting it under her arm?
To indicate that she owns it, meaning that by going like this, it's like her pocketbook.
And she shows
complete ownership over
okay.
it.
And
right?
She turns around and gives it back.
And then they slice it up with a razor blade.
Does she have to take a certain amount of steps away?
We have her walking. I mean, probably around 6 feet or so, we tell her. Usually what they're telling me, I'm just walking the wall and back mm-hmm. with it. I mean, that's the standard way. You know, or then the rabbis will sing, skip around the room.
I wish that was
that's just how it, oh, man, that's how I do it personally. I mean, I don't know if everybody does. That's my own personal stringency. So the Trumas Hadeshim wants to know, what's the difference? What are stringencies that are appropriate, and what are stringencies that are inappropriate? So again, so he writes as follows: Im kein shvichen rachuk b'ha'hi de'git in de'le'el, de'ein ramod al kol osa os b'shem raz git the rishonim. So he said, two cases here. One is we don't make the people watch everyone, and also if you ever open a Torah, right? The Torah, certain letters have crowns on them, right? In a get, the letters don't have crowns on them. Why don't we say that would be a good idea? And it says no. Someone starts putting crowns on their letters, they'll say, oh, that get doesn't have crowns. They're not divorced.
So you'd be there forever.
No. Crowns don't take long.
It takes a while to do all that.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get it written while you're sitting there.
Again, there are differences. I've seen... A sofer that took him 3 hours, and I've seen a sofer that it took him 15 minutes.
Wow.
Right? Yankel Lichter, the guy's the bomb.
Wow, he is.
Yeah, he is. Not for the recording, but some great stories. So the story is that, so that's another case where it's clear, no, you can't, these are stringencies that are not allowed. Because the people get up and say, "Imkin arishem shlo amdu al kol osa yo psulim legami." When you stand between my bear and chacham legami, they have a garret fei below kami funai nechtav, etc. He said, so in those cases, the situation is that people can look at it and say, "There's something very basically wrong here, and therefore it's no good." Abahu the dominioma denan. V'chein harei at muteres afil lofi mashu sovin lahachmi begitin shlo yikosun kach. Oh, you post them with pshitas. He said, the question is, if someone sees you doing it, will they think that this is something that is intrinsically necessary? Right? So again, if the letters are written differently than we do it now, someone might think, aha, there's an intrinsic problem with the get. Right?
Because there's no crowns, we back with crowns?
Right. Right, he's saying. Or if the person gets up and says, It was it was written before me, and I know the person didn't see it all, I might think, and I see other people have to watch it all, I might think that there's a problem. But other things, like people will think, if the guy doesn't say, you know, here's your get, and you can now get remarried to whoever you want, people won't get confused and think, well, then he didn't say the magic words. Because they realize it's written in the document. People will not get confused. So the approach of the Trumas Hadeshen is to say that a chumrah, a stringency, is only problematic if the fact that if it's a type of stringency that seems to be so intrinsic that it would lead people to believe that if you don't do it, it is problematic. That is his limitation. He says that's where you draw the line. The Pri Chadash says sort of the same. And he says there are situations where it's proper and to be machmir, and there are certain situations where it's not. And he says as follows, and this is something that we've been talking about for a while now. There are times when the majority opinion in halacha shifts, right? The case that we always go back to is grape juice for Kiddush. Up until the 1950s or so, the standard Orthodox approach was grape juice cannot be used for Kiddush. And nowadays, the standard approach, I'd say near, if not unanimous, opinion is that grape juice is absolutely fine for Kiddush. right? There's been a shift, right? Right. We've spoken about the idea of surrogacy, right? Is it the gestational mother? Is it the biological mother? And again, we don't really have clarity at this point what it is, right? So there's a possibility. And there have been other times where, what?
Right.
Right. Well, again, that's a little different. I would not.
It wasn't always standard.
Well, again, it's not really standard now either. That's, you know, without getting involved in it. Everything says God.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean everything is God.
Oh, no.
That's why it's that. That's not.
I see what you mean.
That might be more of a marketing change than a halachic change. Right, you see, glatt kosher fish, glatt kosher dairy.
That's not right.
So that's what I'm saying is that even glatt kosher meat, right now there's different types of glatt now. There's Beit Yosef glatt. There's, you know, so that's why I don't want to use that as an example. But there are definitely cases where things have shifted. Now the Gemara talks about the case, and it's quoted here, about that in the event that for a man to marry a woman, he has to give her something that is worth a pruta, a small coin. Right? What if the man, if the woman lends the man 100, what if the, let's say, the woman borrows $100,000 from the man? Right. What? Yeah, they just do business together, okay? And now she's in trouble. He said, I'll make you a deal. You marry me and I will forgive the debt. That's a nice ring.
It's a very nice ring.
Are they married? When he rips up the IOU, now are they married? And they break the plate? And they have a smorgasbord? Right, he says to her, haray at mikudeshously, right, with the eraser of this debt, and she, and he gives her the IOU back. Right? And she burns it in the Stanley Cup. Right, and that, there you have it, done. Okay, that's what, are they married? They are not. They are not.
Even
because
with witnesses?
Even with witnesses, even with a photographer and a videographer, right, wearing, what? Correct, because he never gave her anything, right? She got
her.
So what if he says, okay, I hereby, we're now getting married, with me getting rid of the debt plus a nickel. So you would think, why are they married, Jenny?
Because
he gave her a nickel. The Gemara has a machokas about this. And the Gemara says, oh, come on. What is she really focused on? The nickel or the $100,000 debt? Right? Right? So if she's really focused on the 100,000, so if he just says, haray mekadeshously with the nickel, for sure they're married. If he says the nickel plus the erasure of the debt, that was a machokas. Right? It's a machokas actually between David HaMelech and Shaul HaMelech. It's a long story beyond right now. Right? So the Gemara kind of had it that at one point the halacha was one way, and then the halacha turned another way. Right? This was a case where at one point they thought, you know what? You know, he gave her a nickel. Why is it any worse that he also threw in $100,000 debt? Then afterwards they thought, no, it is worse actually they threw in the $100,000 debt. So the Pri Chadar says, if there is a possibility that the agreement, the halachic approach is going to change, then it makes sense to be stringent. Right? So for example, let's take the case of where a child is born nowadays with a Jewish egg, but from a non-Jewish surrogate, or a non-Jewish egg and a Jewish surrogate, right? In either of those cases, since we're not 100% sure what the final halachic decision is going to be, we are machmir and we do both to make sure down the road in 2-3, right? So that's what the Pri Chadar says. Anytime you have a situation where things can turn, right, then it's absolutely appropriate to be stringent. Right? That because in that case of what?
Of the like the surrogate, but something else.
Over the years there have been many examples. So, for example, Rus was a great example, right? Can a female Moabite convert? At the time there was doubt. Now we have complete agreement that yes, They're lining up at my doors, female Moabites who want to convert. Knocking them out one after another. So again, so the idea being that previously, right, well, a stringency would have been called for, right? Not
now.
Right. But nowadays, there's no longer. It's not going to change anymore. We have it's settled law at this point. So that is the pre-chadash. So the pre-chadash is. So again, right now we have two approaches. Right, the first approach was the Trumas Hadeshet. Again, and these aren't one versus the other. These can work together. It says that in the event that something would seem to be intrinsically problematic, right? If people don't do it, that's inappropriate. Everything else is appropriate. Here we're saying if things are arguably going to change, then again, a stringency is appropriate there. The Yad Balachi, number four, has a very interesting approach.
Well, wait a minute. Before.
Yes.
Can I ask a question about this? So, we don't think anything is going to change in terms of the get.
No. Again,
that's all settled. And
right.
Before. Okay.
Right. So things that are settled.
Right. There's no chance of that shifting in any way.
Correct. Now, it happens to be. This does still come up nowadays in get. So let me throw out an example.
Okay.
You know, when you write a get, you write the name of the city and the rivers. Right? Let's say somebody, got divorced in St. Petersburg.
Okay.
And now all of a sudden it became Leningrad.
Right?
If we start writing Leningrad, people might look at the St. Petersburg ones and saying, no good.
As opposed to the name change?
Or let's say hypothetically, someone got divorced in Stapleton. And they wake up one day, and it's no more Stapleton.
Right.
Now, like so many other places, it's Central Park.
And is it called Central Park?
Right. So in those right. So the question is, do we now start changing it, or we say someone's going to come and say, no, people who get divorced here, it's supposed to say Central Park. If it says Stapleton, that was whoever did that did the wrong name, and therefore, obviously, they're not divorced. Right, so this idea can. There are situations where it could happen. It's not such a crazy case, where you might not want to switch for fear of messing up the first people.
So that could affect the get.
Right, as we're saying. So again, that is a case where it could happen. Right.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah. What?
In the get process?
Yeah, not a lot. You've got to be pretty creative.
Yeah, I would not have thought of a city name change.
Right. Whatever. The Moscow River, which has been used in Gittin for many years,
right.
Is now a highway.
Oh.
Because they dried it out and they paved it.
Yeah.
Right? So
they can't use that as a river.
Correct. But all the other ones had the Moscow River in them.
No, I'm saying, so today when you write a get in Moscow...
Right. So, yeah, that's the question. You know, to what extent are we concerned? You're going to write the Moscow River, but there is no such thing.
Right.
Versus the situation, but all the other ones say the Moscow River.
Yeah.
Right, so again, this is something that comes up in Gittin,
okay.
Not often, but not never either.
Thanks.
The Yad Balachi makes the following statement, which is a very interesting statement, and he says as follows. He says, when it comes to a get, which is the case that Gemara is talking about, you run into a real problem. I mean, if someone's going to say the get is no good, you're basically saying that the children from the woman's second marriage are mamzerim.
Right.
Compare that to the high point case. If you're going to get up and say it's not really kosher, so therefore
that doesn't affect generation.
Tisk. You know that story.
Yes.
So therefore, the Yad Balachi is of the opinion that we only don't allow stringencies in the area of Gittin.
Oh, that's interesting.
Of divorce, because that is a situation where the potential for laws really has significant effects. But in all other cases, so someone's going to get up and say, the other people didn't do right. So that is a different approach, meaning that. Again, that's clearly against the Trumas Hadeshet. It's against the the pre-Chadash, both of who are more respected than this, but it's notable that there is such an opinion, right? The Avkas Rochel, who wrote the Avkas Rochel? Anyone ever hear the Avkas Rochel? I shot the Avkas Rochel in my pajamas. I don't know how he got there. So the Avkas Rochel was written by Rav Yosef Cairo.
How can he end up with all these names?
Right? Very interesting. Yeah, it's by far, it's his least known work. People heard of the Shulchan Aruch, they heard of the Beis Yosef, they heard of the Kesef Mishnah. Avkas Rochel is a little different. So he wants to know as follows. He says, what if I go to a community and they have a certain, let's say, I grew up in a community where we didn't have an Erev, and now I go to a community where they have an Erev. Do you have a right to say, listen, I don't use Erevs?
Does he have a right to say that?
Yeah, I want to be stringent. I don't want to use an Erev. Or are we saying that you're getting around saying that all these other people aren't religious?
It feels like those are two different things to me.
What?
I want to be stringent is different than...
Well, I want to be stringent means because I think it's a problem. And I think it's a problem and you're doing it.
Like I said, I think there's two different things. I think it's a problem, but you don't have a problem with it. And that's what the community does.
Well, I don't drive on Shabbos.
Okay.
And you do. Okay. But the you who does,
yes.
I'm saying you're not religious.
Okay.
You're Machal Shabbos v'Farhasa.
Okay, for driving.
And you should be killed, stoned, dead. Now.
You're into it. I get it.
Right? So you don't say, well, you know, I think it's not a problem. You think it is. You think it's not a problem. No. You don't want to be doing that. You don't want to be walking around.
I come from somewhere that doesn't have an Erev, and so I'm not going to take the benefits of the Erev. But the guy.
But why not?
But the guy next to me carries his sefer to the shul.
Right, but
it doesn't make him not religious.
Well, if I think the Erev is no good, haya.
If the Erev is no good.
Why am I not using the Erev?
Because you didn't have one. You didn't
think. Maybe I didn't have one, but now I do have one. That's ridiculous.
You didn't grow up with.
I didn't grow up with a car. So now therefore I'm not using it? No, I think there's a problem with it.
So everybody has to use the Eruv if there's an Eruv?
Haya. So Masha Kasati Bishem Arush, Afil Haroleh, Mamakum Shem Mach Mirim, Mamakum Shemekilim, Bafil Daita Rasu, Yeshmanukule, Hamakum Shahalach Rasham. So you write, if I come from a place where people are stringent, and I move to a place where the people are being less stringent, the Beis Yosef says, I have to be less stringent. Because you're such a machmer. I am very open-minded and progressive. Va'al yachmir kiminag makombo. Minei machokas. You're going to lead to fights. Right? People will say, well, why aren't you doing it? Shinika bo shinei minag. Right? Von kavacho. Ma hasam shedaito lachso minkombo. Afilu haki noe kiminag amakum shaholach v'sham shemekim b'vnei machokas. Vein daito lachso minkombo. Malachas kam v'kama. I move to this community, I should be following what everyone else is doing. And if they traditionally hold one, that's fine. Etc. So this is actually the exact opposite, shall we say, of the Yad Malachi. Yad Malachi says, the only time I can't be machmir is in the case of get, because that's very serious. The Avkas Rochel, supposedly the Beis Yosef, says no. It's not appropriate to ever be machmir in something where it's obvious that everyone else is not doing it. Right? If I walk through the streets wearing my talus and everyone else is carrying the talus bag, and it's 98 degrees and there's no reason why anyone in their right mind would be wearing a wool talus down the street, right? I'm making a statement.
So what if it's 32 degrees?
Yeah, so it's 30, I can wear
it. People are still carrying it.
But then it won't be obvious. Then obvious. Right. But if I, any time that I am making, I'm doing something which is obviously, you know, a stringency which other people aren't following. So.
So can that be, for example, why isn't that applied to the brus?
So if I'm living in a community where everybody else eats kibrucks,
right?
I cannot noticeably not eat kibrucks according to this. Correct. Huh? Yeah.
But so then how do people, I mean, I've sat at Seder's where people don't eat the broth, so I've not been able to have them.
So again, I will give multiple answers.
Okay.
One answer is there's really a tradition that all people eat kibbutz, that this is the minig of Denver.
I don't know.
Tradition? No. Meaning that the tradition here in Denver and in America and in most places, is people do what they want. You know, that some people do and some people don't. I'm not making a statement here.
Okay.
Right? But in the event that our synagogue has one opinion, and this is what we do,
right?
If we got up and we made an announcement that, you know, in this synagogue, this is what we do, and there's halachically, it's a valid opinion, you didn't have a right to say, yeah, I'm not interested.
Okay.
So that's again, this is the other end of the spectrum. This is saying that I can never be stringent in an area where it's against the standard
the community
is doing, and it is obvious. Now, interesting, this does come up a little bit in the Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avraham has like this. So there is a question about how to write tefillin. Right? I'm sure no one knows what the tefillin looks like on the inside. So if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, it says, Yasa kol parashoseh psuchos, there should be a gap between each of the four parashos in the tefillin. Right? This is talking about...
Are you talking about the four spaces?
No, we're saying that in the Shel Rosh there are four different scrolls, right? Because there are four compartments.
I was going to say there are four compartments,
and each one gets one.
Right.
In the Shel Yad, it's one,
right.
One long one. When you write that long one, so there are four chapters that are written.
Wow.
Right. There should be it. Right. There's the first paragraph of Shema. There's the second paragraph of Shema. Right. Those are two of the four. So it says you should always have a break between them.
So you can see there's one and two and three.
Correct. It's going across. Chutz mi pasha achrona ksuva b'torah shi v'hayim shimawa. And between the third and the fourth, no break. That's what it says. She asen estuma v'imshina pasal. And in fact, if you do it a different way, it's no good. Meaning that if you have a break there, it's problematic. The Ramah says, right, he quotes the different opinions, and he says, says, in fact, we don't do it that way. So one of them says that you need to not have a break there, and the other one says you can have a break there. So what would you do if you had those two options? In theory.
So what I would
probably do is I say, well, if one opinion says it must be this way, and the other opinion says, no, it can be either way, so I'll do it like the first way.
Because he says it must.
Make everybody happy. So the question is, Magen Avraham says, so why does Ramah say we're not doing it that way? No, it says you have to do it another way. It says, the Levush says, if it was up to me, I would do it the way the Shulchan Aruch says. And then everyone would be happy. The Magen Avraham says, no, you have to keep on doing it with the break, even though the Shulchan Aruch says it's possible, because we don't want to say, this is what our fathers did, and their fathers did, and their fathers did, and never their mothers did, that this is the way these children are supposed to look, period. And he said, therefore, you don't just say, well, I want to be machmir and get more opinions. No. We don't follow that. That's not the way that it goes.
So there is a break.
What? Yeah.
Okay.
Even that's what he said. But he applauds. So you see that clearly. He's not. He doesn't think that this idea of there's a problem being machmir, being limited to gittin.
Right.
No, he says that even in tefillin. It's interesting. It happens to be that this is something very private. You have no idea what's going on inside of my tefillin.
Right.
Despite that, he says, no, we do not accept upon ourselves these chumrah. We don't do that. The Mari ben Lev has a very interesting split. He says, when can you, when can't you? He says, you cannot be stringent in kumva ase, but you can be stringent in sheva al tase. What does that mean? Let's translate those. Kum Va'ase is active, and the Sheva Al Tese is passive. He says, I cannot do something, which is a stringency, because I'm actively going against what people are doing, but I can passively be stringent. What? Well, what's the example of passively being stringent? Right? So people, let's say, in my community, they eat fish and milk together. I personally want to follow the Beis Yosef. And therefore, I don't want to eat cream cheese and lox.
Okay.
Right? That's not a problem. Because
it's passive.
It's passive. No,
you're choosing.
Meaning that, no, not that I'm choosing, but people won't notice it. Right?
Notice it.
Right? Like it's the famous story about Rav Moshe Feinstein. There was a disagreement about, you know, which chol of Yisrael, which milk is appropriate. So one time he was sitting, and there's two brands, and one was in front of him, and he reached past the first one, and he took the second one. And they said, why, you know, you're making statements? He picked up the first one, he said, empty, dead soldier, right? That's why I did it. This is, I, so good.
People can go to town with that.
Right, that's the reason, so too. I'm not having bagel, cream cheese, and lox because I want tuna, because I'm not hungry. I don't like cream cheese, whatever it is, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah, so that's the way he divides it. If it's passive, you can't tell what the person, if it's active, that would be problematic. Very interesting, there is a more recent piece here, number 10, which talks about the idea of basically what's called Schlissel Challah. Anyone familiar? Rachel knows about Schlissel. What is Schlissel Challah? What was that? What? Right, is it right after Pesach?
I was going to say, is that the key in the challah?
Right, so they put a key in the challah. Why did they put a key in the challah?
I don't remember.
Right, so it would seem that that many holy Jewish women have done it for years and years.
Yeah,
and since, right? It ends up that it's really based in Avodah Zarah. It's really, non-Jewish. So the question is, are you allowed to get up and speak against it? Or no? Why are you saying that all these people beforehand did something wrong?
Well, why are we still doing it?
Excellent question. Well, who's this we that you talk about?
I know people who read this after Pesach.
I know people who eat chametz on Pesach.
Well, we're talking about
Shlissel
Challah.
Okay,
well,
I'm saying,
it's like it's a minhag that continues to go on, is what I'm saying.
So, yeah, it's an oddball, but he gets up and he says, anything that's, of course, a halachic violation, obviously you don't turn around and say, well, you know, we don't want to insult the earlier people about it. No, you don't want to insult God.
Right.
Right?
So
therefore, obviously, so, right? Yeah.
Okay, and what was the
Avodah
Zarah on that? What is it?
Again, I'm not really that much of an expert.
Rachel, not even
what? Well, I think Frida yelled out something.
Right.
So you'll discuss with her afterwards. So obviously, the idea that we don't want to insult the earlier generations does not apply if something is actually problematic. Like, you know, we India, right? So I remember there were so many things that people, when we were growing up, right? There were foods that people ate, right? Whether it was Velveeta cheese, right? Right? Or, you know, we could probably list off a few of them that weren't actually kosher, right? So you don't get up and say, well, we still eat it because we don't want to insult the first people who were eating it. Right. So too. Obviously, if it's right, you know, if it's a problem, it's a problem. A few other points here. So, Rav Avadya quotes from the Maharam in Wittenberg. The Maharam says, "I used to, as a kid, I should read a little bit of this." He says, "You may chorfe yisi mislotzis bnei adam shiru nivnim merecho baser behema acher gvina." He said, "I used to laugh at people who wouldn't eat meat after milk." I thought it was like fear. Like, what, you make up your own religion? The Gemara says you can't eat milk after meat. It never says you can't have meat after milk. Until one time I was eating a hamburger and I realized there was still cheese in my teeth from the previous meal. After I took upon myself, I'm waiting the same 3-6 hours. That's stringency. I'm not arguing on the local most of it. I'm not, he said, I understand that this isn't it, but this is something personal. But he said, even though it says that, etc., you know, he said, because a few things. He says, one is the Gemara itself, which talks about waiting, is based on astringency, Meanwhile, a rabbi got up there and says, I am vinegar, the son of wine. Why? Because my father, when he used to eat meat, he would not drink milk for the next 24 hours. And I will already do it at the next meal. Now, obviously, he wasn't saying my father, he was unduly machmir, and therefore, so the idea when it comes to waiting, for whatever reason, built into it is the ability to be more stringent upon yourself.
So why didn't he take on the stringency, I will not eat meat until I wash out my mouth or brush my teeth?
But this is what he did. This is what he felt necessary for himself. It was personal. He wasn't telling anybody
right,
what to do.
Right, he wasn't saying everyone has to do this.
Right, so he says, even he said that there's nothing wrong with it. And the Maharan gets on and says, by the way, I don't care about chicken. If I eat, I don't wait to eat chicken. I wait to eat meat.
Even when it got put in the category of meat?
Right, he says that again, but it's only rabbinic, so I'm not going to, I accept it on myself not to eat beef after, I'm not going to worry about
it.
That's what he says. So that's what he says. So what do we see from here, Rav Avadya says? He said, L'chora mashu divei maram, the dafka k'sheyotza b'zeh yesh l'hachmer. So he seems to be saying that only if you yourself personally have a need for something, that would be, it's good to be machmer. So, for example, there are people who know that they have issues, right? But let's say I know I have an issue with my weight. It happens. What do? So, therefore, I say to myself, no more ice cream for me. No more ice cream. I'm kind of, even that parve stuff that Marsha brings, you know, that's it. No more ice cream. And in the event that I find that I'm still imbibing, I might get up and I say, you know what? I'm not even going to walk into an ice cream store anymore. Right, because this is what I personally, you people are all very thin and svelte, and you can do whatever you want, but me, right? So Rav Avadya says, a chumra is something that you accept upon yourself because you need it yourself, and then it is appropriate. I'm not getting, people who walk into ice cream stores and eat ice cream, I don't think there's anything wrong with them, right? I admire them, the fact that they can go in and eat a minimal amount or, you know, not go in.
A scoop.
Right? They can single scoop it or they can exercise afterwards or they were blessed with an excellent metabolism. Right? Whatever. I don't think there's anything wrong with them. I think it's me. So he says, just like here, the Maharam got up. He didn't say, you know, oh, now I realize everybody has to wait afterwards that long. No, this was a personal thing. So that's statement number one he picks up from this. So he says that that's why it is appropriate to do it in this case. He goes and he discusses it a little bit more. But, you know, so his point is that chumras are appropriate for people who need chumras. Right? There are different people who, you know, it's might be they have an issue with something, you get by with it. The Radvaz makes an interesting point, and he writes as follows. So he's dealing with a question in Hilchos Nida. We won't go into it. But he gets up and he says, you know why I don't like chumras? The problem with chumras is that people, you know, end up being machmir on something which they don't have to, and that leads them to being makel on other things. Right, the bottom line is if you find yourself being overly stringent, right, your worldview gets out of joint. Rabbi Shatta tells this great story. We at the Beis Din enjoyed the story very much. And there was a guy who was very stringent in everything. So there's something called yashan, meaning that you're not supposed to eat any grain that has grown unless Pesach has passed, when the Korban Omer was brought. That's what's called Yashan. So therefore, obviously, right after Pesach, there's no problem. But as you go on in the year, at some point, you got to think about it, right? At what point in the year could, let's say, wheat have been planted and grown and made it to market and into the product, etc.? So, Rosh Hashanah time depends, again, on what grain it is, what the where you live, etc. That's the story. So this guy was very nervous about Yashan. So therefore, the night after Pesach, he would go and buy all his Cheerios for the year. He'd go and buy cases of Cheerios. Okay? Now, one year he purchased his Cheerios, and it was Erev the next Pesach, and he still had a case of Cheerios left because he
overbought,
right? He didn't...
He overestimated.
He did it right. He didn't like Cheerios as much as he thought he did.
He thought it was a leap year, and it wasn't.
Right, whatever reason it was. He ended up with more Cheerios. But, of course, he's very religious, so he doesn't sell his chametz. So, therefore, he went to the local kosher store and said, I'll make you a deal. I have a case of Cheerios. I'll sell them to you for $1 a box. And the store owner says, deal. Put it in the back with the chametz I'm selling, you know, and here's $20 for your 20 boxes. Okay? Pesach is over. The store owner goes to the back, opens his case, and finds out the Cheerios are a year old. He didn't realize that. He said,
well, he thought he brought him fresh
Cheerios. He didn't know what he was doing. He said, I want to sell you Cheerios at $1 a box. Okay. He didn't realize this guy bought it a year ago. So he says, I can't sell year-old Cheerios. You know, take your Cheerios back and give me my $20. So he went to Bezdin, and in fact, the store owner won. And based on that, so what's the halacha? The halacha is that he gives the money back because the deal never counted. So who owned 20 boxes of Cheerios on Pesach?
It sounds like first guy.
The seller.
Yeah.
Who doesn't sell his chametz.
Yeah.
Which means he owned 20 boxes of Cheerios over Pesach.
Yes.
So Rav Shach says, if you take enough stringencies, you can get a really big aveira out of it. Right? This guy managed to string up enough stringencies.
So stringent.
Right. He really was over a whopper.
Right.
And he ended up owning a ton of chametz
on
Pesach.
The other side of the pail.
Right? So that's what the Radva says. You know, everybody should keep the mitzvahs. Don't start making up your own religion. Just do what you have to do. Yishar Mitzuyim B'Halacha has a similar idea, where he talks about the idea of a person should not take upon themselves a chumra when it's not appropriate, because accepting a chumra is when it's not appropriate will lead to nothing but trouble. So he said, what's wrong with this? He said a few things. He said, lefamim machmir al atzma dover hamutar legamri al pi gemara. He says, V'chia poskim, I'm going to decide that something is problematic, even though there's no problem whatsoever with it. Right? Famous story where Rav Soloveitchik and his son came home one day, and they said, you know, we can use some ice cream. So they go to the freezer, they take out the ice cream, they take a bowl, they take a spoon, and they're eating it, and the Rebbetzin walks in and says, you're using a fleshing bowl and a fleshing spoon! You're fortrafing my whole kitchen! So she said, it's cold. It's cold, it's not a problem. The Shulchan Aruch says, she said, yeah, you and your Shulchan Aruch are going to make my whole kitchen trafe.
He's right.
So, not necessarily. Meaning that, if the rabbis say it's allowed, it's allowed. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. He said, and it comes from the following idea. Right? He says, he quotes a medrash in Koheles Rabbah, which talks about that if somebody is merciful when they shouldn't be, it's going to lead them to becoming cruel when they shouldn't be. Right? If you remember, Shaul, the king, did not want to kill the king of Amalek. Right?
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, of his tremendous mercy. Eventually he ends up wiping out the entire city of Kohanim. Because once you're messed up with what's right and what's wrong,
you're really messed up.
Correct. So that's the story regarding.
Can I ask you something about the ice cream and the
place
you pull?
Yes.
So I get what the response about the colt, but then the question is, how do you wash the bowl and the spoon?
In the sink with soap and a...
cold water. You let it sit on the side for 24
hours. Where do I sit?
You let it sit and then you wash it.
No.
But not with hot water.
No. Not with boiling water that you can't
see. No.
Yeah, it's fine. Just wash it with soap and water. And
no, but am I washing it with my Miltic sponge?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The Fleischer bowl, I'm washing with my Miltic sponge.
Yeah.
Okay. It would have thrown me a little.
Last comment, and we're going to end with this, is the Pesach Einayim in Bava Metzia says the idea that people shouldn't be overly stringent, that's only with matters between them and God. However, when it comes between you and your friend, you can be as stringent as you want. Right? You can be as nice as you want. You can give them whatever you want. You can go out of your way, and you can go to the furthest stringencies regarding your friend. God doesn't want you to be overly stringent, but don't worry. If you want to be an overly nice person, there is room to be lenient in that case. Okay.